So we are starting a new series, new year, new series, and then it's Lent really soon. That's crazy, by the way. So this series will be for about 6 weeks, and what we're venturing into is the book of Joshua. Some parts in Joshua. Joshua's a bigger book. We're not going to have enough time to go through the whole book, but we're talking about Joshua and leadership. And to set the stage, Joshua is the successor to Moses. Yes, that Moses. To tell you a little bit about who Moses is and what he has done, he is the great Moses. God called out to Moses and gave him direction. And even though Moses wasn't, the best leader you would think to do the job, Moses was the one that God picked. But Moses led the people of Israel that were in Egypt, out of Egypt. They never thought that they would ever be able to get from under Egyptian rule, because Egypt was powerful. And God led these people through Moses out of Egypt. And then they got, through the Red Sea. You've heard that one before. And here they got to the other side. And then God even talked further to the people of Israel, but always through Moses. And then God said this: I'm giving you the promised land. That's yours. So why don't you go check it out? So what Moses did is he sent 12 spies into the promised land, the land of milk and honey, right? And he sent those spies there to check it out, see what we're up against. And 10 of those spies came back and said, "Oh, no way, we can't do it. They are giants," even though they probably weren't giants, but they said, "They're giants, there's no way." Two of those spies said, "God said we could take these people. We could take these people." And those two people were Caleb and Joshua. They were the ones that had faith that said, "We could take these people. We could take the promised land, just like God said." However, when 12 people come back and 10 people say, "They're giants," and two people are like, "We could take them," most people are going to go to the 10 people and say, "Yeah, I believe you, not those two." And so all people decided that we're not going to the promised land. And so what God did was he punished them and said, "You doubt me and what I am giving you, then listen, you're going to get 40 years in the desert." And to think this out. And so what God was doing is he was punishing them and saying, "I'm waiting until the next generation, they will go into the promised land." So 40 years is after all of these people die off. And in fact said, Moses is only going to go to the brink of the promised land. He's not going in. So our passage today is right after Moses dies, and it's now time for Joshua and the next generation to take the reins and move on into the promised land. So here is our passage today. Joshua chapter 1, 1 through 5. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you, nor will I forsake you." God is great at introductions, making us feel good. The first words he says to Joshua are, Moses is dead. And to us, we're like, okay, yeah, he's just stating a fact and things like that. But you got to realize, okay, Moses was the guy in Egypt who got him out of Egypt, who said, all right, I'm going to speak to God from you. And if there was a phrase they were dreading and information they were dreading, it was that your leader is dead. Moses is dead. And it cuts to the heartstrings like, oh, okay, well, now what are we going to do? And Moses was the guy that took them out. He spoke to God for them. He led them. He actually was the one that would feed them, right? He was the one who could take his stick and hit a rock, and then, because if they didn't have water, they would hit the rock, and the water would come out of the rock, okay? It's great having a guy like that around, right? And he's dead. Moses is dead. Oh, great. And so what do we do now? God goes on further, says, first he says, Moses is dead. Then he goes on further and says, I am sending you to the place that you have feared for over 40 years. That place that, you know, your generation before you, who got out of Egypt, they've kind of dealt with a really big thing that you talk about, and they're always like, that amazing thing. They went through the Red Sea. They were amazing. You know, I think of the greatest generation and the things that they went through with World War II, and I try to think of how I would deal. I don't know how they did it. This is amazing. And so I look at those generations and say, I don't know if I could do that. These people, 40 years later, say, I don't know how they went through the Red Sea. And now they're saying, oh, so we're supposed to go to the place that they were scared of? All right. So, you know, we all have this place where we'd like to be, this promised land. And it sounds great, and it looks awesome. But when we look at it and everything that we have to face in order to get there, we say, eesh, I don't know if I can do that and go through that. I do want to get there. However, I don't know if I can do what it's going to take in order to get there. When I decided that I really wanted to be a pastor, I was like, yeah, that looks awesome. I want to do what they do, I'll do that, sign me up, and basically then they said, okay, this is what you have to do. So they threw this huge booklet at me, and just basically said, you got to do all of this. And so they said, you have to do a year of Hebrew, you have to do a year of Greek, and I was like, I failed Italian in high school, and I don't know anything. And so I have to do it on a master's level. Okay. And then they're like, you do 3 years of seminary, field education. You have to conquer your fear of public speaking. You have to speak in front of a large group of people. And you have to read the whole Bible, which I had not at that time. And you have to know it on a really deep, rich level and take theological courses. And I had to be honest, I was like, I don't even know what the word theological even means. And then you have to pass all of these tests in order to get there. And I was like, oh, all right. I just thought it was like a sign me up kind of thing. But I felt called, and I wanted to be there. And so you go through the hard times in order to get there. But when you look from a distance, it's terrifying. And that's what these people are looking at when they look at the promised land. They are looking at a terrifying thing, knowing they have to go through some hard times to get to where they want to be. This church, at one time, looked to the future to get into a healthier situation after a whole bunch of setbacks happened in this church. And not everybody that's here, part of this church, were part of that, but it's part of the history of this church. And many people looked at those setbacks and situations and said, that's too hard. I don't know if I can go through that to get there. And some people left. And that's okay that they did, because not everybody is destined for the same journey and the same promised land. And so and it takes a lot to get to the promised land, and you have to go through some hard times in order to get there, and that's what it is. But it's neat to see where God led this church to get into a healthy situation and a healthy position. Now, we still have a long way to go, and we are not totally into the promised land. We have a lot of things to do, but it's neat to see that at one time, people stood and said, I don't know if we could ever get there. And that's really hard. And God worked in that and said, you can, and we will. So God states the fear, Moses is dead, then he sends them to the desired place that scares the junk out of them, right? And then he says, it's yours. It's yours. It's actually really simple. It's yours. You can have it. It's yours. Have it. Here. Here you go. If we want to be the church that everybody in the community looks to for change, that we're actually a beacon of light into the community, that, I always ask this one question. If our church disappeared tomorrow, would anybody notice it? And for most churches, it's maybe not, probably not. And if you want to be the church that if you go away, everybody that even doesn't even attend here knows you're not here anymore, I call that the promised land. And that's hard to get there. But God is basically saying, it's yours. You can have it. In this passage, there is one thing that God is speaking to as he speaks and says, Moses is dead. Here's where you can go. It's yours. But there's one thing he's doing. He is speaking to a leader. There is only one way that you can get to the promised land, and that is through a leader. Joshua is a leader. Joshua, he has been passed on from Moses to Joshua. You know, our church moved into a healthier place because of leaders that said, I don't want it to keep on going this way. I would like it to move to a greater place, a healthier place. So God's call in this passage is to a leader, and that's Joshua. So the only way we do amazing and new things is through leaders. Leaders that are called, and leaders that say, I don't think that I'm prepared to do that. I'm not qualified to do that. But leaders that say, I'd like to try that and learn how to do that. And yeah, maybe I can do that. I heard a phrase once, and I love it. And I'm using it as the basis for this whole series, because this series really is about leadership. And that everybody in their life needs a Moses and a Joshua. No matter what your age is, you need a Moses and a Joshua. You see, healthy people, healthy churches, healthy organizations all have people that say, I need a mentor, someone that can tell me what they've experienced, and they can help me to grow in different ways. And I really, really need to be mentoring someone so I can pass this on to the next generation, so it doesn't die with me. Everybody, no matter if you consider yourself a very high leader or not a leader at all, you need a Moses and a Joshua. That's how healthy people, healthy churches, healthy organizations run, with mentors and disciples. And so, you see, people who are leaders and teachers, and people who are learners and followers, and every person is called to fill both roles. Even if you don't believe that you have a lot to give to someone, you do. You have experiences, and you are to pass those on. Joshua became such a good leader Because he sat at the feet of Moses, that guy who was listening and sitting at the feet of God, and he learned from him, and he experienced all sorts of things. And Moses took Joshua under his wing, and he taught him all sorts of things that he had learned and what he experienced when he was on the mountaintops and all of it. And then Moses was not afraid to send Joshua out while Moses was still alive to go do things, to go try some things out. When I was younger and I was slightly thinking about ministry, I got invited by a pastor of our church and the youth group that he was running to be the speaker for a weekend retreat with middle schoolers, about 40 to 50 middle schoolers. I was way out of my league on this one. I was used to teaching elementary kids, and I could make up whatever I wanted, and they'd believe me. And I was to sit in front of 50 middle schoolers and entertain them, and then teach them about God, which I was still not really sure about. And the pastor was like, "Here you go. There's your job for the weekend." And then I sat down, I opened up my Bible, which I have to be honest, I read it when I was in a youth Sunday school class, but never really opened it up. People thought I did, but I really didn't, and I didn't know it all that well. And so I had to create stories that connect the scripture, which I don't really totally understand yet, and I have to put it in a way that the kids would listen and be entertained, and then take something home. And I thought lots of stories, and they were terrible stories. And I talked about fishing with hot dogs with my father and connected it to the feeding of the 5,000, and they didn't connect. They didn't, it was awful. I look now at some of these, I'm like, what were you thinking? This was terrible. But the pastor gave me a shot. He said, "Here, do it." I couldn't get to the place of being comfortable and leading if I didn't get a shot and go out there. My education with student teaching was the same way. I was just thrown out, and everybody else was like waiting 6 weeks before they even taught in the class. And my student teacher said, "You're teaching the whole class today, and you are for the rest." And it was my first day. I'm like, "What?" But it was the greatest thing, because I was uncomfortable, and I would have never gotten out of my place of comfort if I didn't hit it head on. I think in church and in life, we don't let people mess up enough. We don't. So what happens is we have a lot of good leaders, and we do it on our own. We don't want to offend people. We don't want them to run away. And so often we just do it on our own. It's easier to do it on our own, and it's quicker. However, after a while, you get tired and you get frustrated that you have no help. And why aren't they helping is because we never personally invited them and took them in as a Joshua. And that's what happens in the church. So doing it yourself works for a while, and it probably works pretty effectively for a while, but eventually you get tired. And it doesn't create a healthy organization, because what happens is you don't make any friends in the church, and you feel like you're just serving all the people in the church. And churches that work on a model of a few people doing a lot of things and not bringing in Joshuas, what happens is you create a church of consumers, people who suck the life out of the church and those leaders. But really, the whole thing in the way churches are supposed to work is that you actually understand Jesus more and come into faith by serving. That we are all supposed to be servers. And Jesus, I mean, he was always giving stories about how the last will be the greatest. The ones who serve will understand me more. And the whole church system works when we serve, that actually we actually understand Jesus more. So Moses gave Joshua tasks. He was a spy for Moses. He did all sorts of leadership for Moses. He did some really big things while Moses was still alive, saying, sink or swim, come on. And so the people of Israel already knew who the successor was because Moses was filling Joshua as he was going. One of the healthiest signs of a church is that churches produce leaders. So when you get a lot of leaders coming out, then you know that it's a healthy church because leaders are being produced and being cycled and being discipled. And churches that have a Moses and a Joshua are ones that are healthy and that keep going. This church has big plans. You see, if we didn't have big plans, then it's just like staying in the desert. We cannot stay here and say, we've had a great Christmas, and people are coming, and this is great, and I hope that things just stay like this. To stay here is not the way the church was created. The church was created by Jesus to always be on the move, to not be stagnant. A church that sits still is not good. Could you imagine if the Israelites stayed in the desert and said, I've grown to like it in the desert. It's not bad. The view is great. Promised land, yeah, that's great. Good for those people over there, but the desert is comfortable. It's nice. If the Israelites never went into the promised land, they would have died in the desert and they would have just trickled away. The promised land is where they flourished, where they grew. And so a lot of churches, I would say 90% of churches, are okay with how they are. And they just say, this is good. I like this. And I don't really care if anything changes. But the reality is if you're not moving, then you are declining. It's one or the other. If you're moving into the community and wanting to change the community and help them grow, then that's the place that you're going. But if you're sitting still, you're just choosing to stay in the desert. And that's the way it is. The only way that we can do that and continue to move is that if you're continuing to build disciples and say, here's what I've learned. Here's what I'm passionate for. Here it goes. And as Joshua's, the only way we can really understand this, if as we come to church and we're trying to understand Jesus and understand how this all works, is to say, I see what that person's doing. And they love serving this church. And I want to be part of that. How do I join them and follow them? Because we all need to be Moses's. And we all need Joshua's. It's the only way that we keep moving and headed towards the promised land. So my question is, who's your Moses? And who is your Joshua? And we need to go find them and start growing and start teaching and start moving, because stagnant water is not good for anybody.